We're going to see that Christ ministry is superior to the Old Testament ministry. Now, Christ has already been set forth as being superior to the prophets, to the angels, to Moses, to Aaron, or the priesthood of Aaron. We saw that in chapter 7, that Christ is a superior priest. And now we're going to see in these next few verses here that Christ, as the believer's high priest, forms an incomparably better ministry. So Christ is our high priest, and as our high priest, his ministry is so much better than any ministry of any priest previous to that. Now, in chapter 8, verse 1, it says, "Now the things which we have spoken, this is the sum." In other words, sum literally means the main point. And so the author says, this is the main point of all that we're trying to say. Now, under this area of this being the main point, he's going to list three aspects of this main point. Verse 1, it says, "Now the things which we have spoken," this is the sum of the main point. "We have a high priest who is seated on the right hand of the throne of the majesty in heaven." So we have a high priest that serves in heaven. Christ is seated. He's serving in heaven. He's not on earth. He is seated in heaven. He is not making sacrifices. It's a finished work, and he's established and exalted there at the right hand of God. So part of the main point that the author is listing here is the fact that our high priest serves in heaven. Christ serves in heaven. The prophets, the angels, Moses and Aaron, they do not serve in heaven. They are not seated on the right hand of God. They are not placed in that exalted position, if you will. And also, the fact that Christ is serving in heaven, he is able to intercede for us continually. You remember the high priest, he could only do it once a year, and we'll see this later on in chapter 9. The high priest could only go in and make intercession for the sins of the people once a year, because of the fact that Christ is seated and he has his one final, finished, sufficient sacrifice. He is able to intercede for us on a daily basis, a continual basis. Doesn't have to wait as the Old Testament priest did. And then in verse 2, it says that he is a minister of the sanctuary of the true tabernacle, which the Lord pitched and not man. Now, the sanctuary probably is referring to the heavenly Holy of Holies, or actually it says the real tabernacle or the true tabernacle. Christ serves in the true tabernacle. God pitched this tabernacle. Man pitched the one up on earth. Christ serves in the true tabernacle. And we'll see a little later on that man served only in a copy. So Christ serves in heaven, and now Christ also serves in the true tabernacle. Okay, verse 3. Any questions so far now?
Yes, the true tabernacle, is that heaven then?
Yes. The Lord pitched. So Christ is in heaven serving in the true tabernacle. And a little later on, we're going to see that the earthly tabernacle was only a copy of the heavenly reality. So Christ is serving in the heavenly reality, rather than as the priesthood of Aaron served in the copy. So you can see where the author is going with this pretty easily, I think. Okay, any other questions? Okay, verse 3. It says, "For every high priest is appointed to offer gifts and sacrifices, wherefore it is of necessity that this man have someone also to offer." So every high priest offered gifts and sacrifices, and every priest had a place to minister. And it was because of the fact that every high priest had to have a place to minister, so also Christ had to have a place to minister, and this place is in heaven. And now already, even as the earthly priest had to have a sacrifice of which to offer, we have already seen in chapter 7 what the offering of Christ was. The offering of Christ was his own body. The blood of Christ was the offering that he brought about. And the author begins enlarging that in chapter 9, verse 12. Now, it's interesting. In verse 3, it says, "For every high priest is appointed to offer gifts and sacrifices, wherefore it is of necessity that this man have someone also to offer." And this word "offer" is in the aorist tense, again speaking of the past, final, completed action. The offering of Christ was once and it was sufficient for all. It is not to be repeated. Then in verse 4 it says, "For if he were on earth, he should not be a priest, seeing that there are priests that offer gifts according to the law. Now, Christ has to minister in heaven because the law only allowed the Levitical priesthood to minister on the earth. Now, Christ came to earth to become qualified as our high priest. We saw this in chapter 5. But if Christ tried to serve in the tabernacle or the temple while he was here on earth, he would have been an intruder and his sacrifice would not have been accepted because the law only allowed those of the tribe of Levi to serve on earth. So as a result of that, Christ then had to have a different offering and he also had to have a different place to minister. And this different place of his ministry then, of course, would be in heaven. And we see here that it says that the priests that offer, this is in the present tense, and so this was going on at the time that this was penned, and so this again would make it prior to 70 AD. The only place that the sacrificial system could take place was in the tabernacle or the temple. The temple destroyed in 70 AD, and at that point, the sacrificial system came to an end. Okay, any questions here now so far in verse 4? Down to verse 4.
So Melchizedek, then, where would he have made offering? As similar to Cain and Abel? Or?
Yes, because he was prior to the priesthood. So there was no law then concerning the priesthood. And so that's why Melchizedek was of a different order than the Levitical priesthood, because the Levitical priesthood had not yet been established. Remember, that's about two generations removed here, maybe three generations removed here yet. And so, as far as what Melchizedek, as far as any sacrifices that he might have made, we have no record, but it's a supposition. It would have been similar, I think, to Cain and Abel. Okay, any other questions here down to verse 4 now? Okay, verse 5. I'm talking about these priests that are offering gifts according to the law presently, who serve unto the example and shadow of heavenly things, as Moses was admonished of God when he was about to make the tabernacle. For see, saith he, that thou make all things according to the pattern shown thee on the mount. So perhaps the readers might have regarded the earthly as being more valuable than the heavenly because they could see the earthly. And we have a tendency to go with what we can see. This is why religions that go through great ceremonies and so forth have such an attraction, because we have that tendency. We go with what we can see. And so what he is saying now, he says, you know what? Maybe you want to go back to this tabernacle, to the law system, because we do see this. We do see it going on. But you know what? All that you see is only an imitation or a copy. Not an imitation, but a copy. Why would you want to go to the copy when we have the heavenly reality available to us? So the tabernacle that was pitched upon earth was made according to a pattern that God showed to Moses, and this pattern was of things in heaven. And so, again, apparently there was some type of a true tabernacle established in heaven, and God has shown Moses what this was. He says, I want you to make a copy of that on earth. And so why now, you people that are thinking about going back into the law system, going back into Judaism, why in the world would you want to go with a copy when the real thing's available? I think this is the argument now that the authors begin to share. Okay, any questions now about verse 5 here? Yes.
Tabernacle of heaven that God showed Moses?
Apparently so. Look at the last part of verse 5. He says, for see, and this is a quotation from Exodus chapter 25, verse 40. He says, see, saith he, that thou make all things according to the pattern shown thee of the mount. And so, in the first part of the verse, it says it was a shadow of heavenly things. So apparently there was something there. And when we get in the book of Revelation, we'll see that there is a sea of glass, which would correspond to the labor and so forth. But if priests washed themselves in heaven, it would be a sea of glass because there would be no need for cleansing. And so we see that if these things are there in heaven, so apparently this is a copy of the reality, the true tabernacle, which the Lord pitches. I don't know how far to go with that, but we do see an altar, we do see the labor and so forth in the visions that John had. Okay, the other questions here down in verse 5. Okay, verse 6. It says, but now hath he obtained a more excellent ministry, by how much also he is the mediator of a better covenant, which was established upon better promises. Christ's ministry is better because it is of a better covenant. Now, think about this one. There it is. Christ is the mediator of a better covenant. So the main point of what the author has been trying to tell us so far is that Christ serves in heaven, Christ serves in the tree of tabernacle, and Christ is the mediator of a better covenant. It's interesting, in verse 6, we have more excellent and better listed twice. Three times in this one verse, we have it set forth that what we have now is better, more excellent, better, and better. And so now we see that Christ is the mediator of a better covenant. And this, of course, would be the new covenant. Now, in this area of the covenants, now the Mosaic covenant, which was the old covenant, the Mosaic covenant concerned itself with physical and earthly matters. The Mosaic covenant concerned itself with physical and earthly matters. Now, the Mosaic covenant was conditional. You remember God said, I will if you will. And of course, the people said, oh, no sweat, we'll do it. It lasted a few minutes. And so the Mosaic covenant concerned itself with physical and earthly matters, and it was a conditional covenant. Now, when we talk about the better or the new covenant, the better or the new covenant concerns itself with spiritual matters. Now, again, the Mosaic covenant was conditional. It's a two-sided agreement. I will if you will. The better or the new covenant, which concerns itself with spiritual matters, was one-sided. God said, I will. It was a one-sided agreement, a one-sided testament, as we saw in chapter 7. Yes?
Okay.
Because
if you use this term a few times, it is, in dispensations, we said the new covenant with all the stuff about how creation will be renewed and people will have the life, like the word of God written on their hearts and minds, and the child will play with the cobra and all those kinds of verses. And we said that was going to come. So, is this referring to something else? Or,
well,
do you see a
relationship? Yeah, I see. Hang on a minute. I think we're going to tie all this together here. Okay, any other questions so far now down on the desk? Yes?
This one is unconditional.
The new covenant is unconditional. Remember we saw where God made the testament and it was a one-sided agreement. God said, I will. In the old covenant, it was, I will if you will. The new covenant, God says, I will. So which would we prefer? Okay, any other questions now down to verse 6? This is a slide especially designed for you and your mind for the next hour. Darkness, lightness, chaos. Okay, verse 7. Now, beginning in verse 7, we begin to deal now with the two covenants. The two covenants. Verse 7 says, for if that first covenant had been faultless, then there should no place have been sought for the second. And so the author is saying now the Levitical system was inadequate. And we have already seen how the Levitical system can never bring man to completion or never bring man to an awareness of completion. And so it was inadequate. And as a result of that, God replaced it. Then in verse 8, it says, for finding fault with them, he saith, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. Now, the fault was not with the covenant. The fault was with the people. The people could not live up to it. The inadequacy of the covenant was its inability to provide a way for the people to live up to it. They could not do it. Man could not keep the law. They just did not have the wherewithal to maintain or keep the law. And so as a result of that now, God announced the new covenant during the days of Jeremiah. Now in Jeremiah chapter 31, verses 31 and 34, God announced the new covenant. Let's go back over to that and take a look at it. Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 31. Jeremiah Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 31. It says, "Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. Not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they broke, although I was a husband unto them, saith the Lord. But this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, saith the Lord, I will put my law in their inward parts and write it in their hearts, and will be their God, and they shall be my people. And they shall teach no more every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, Know the Lord. For they shall all know me, from the least of them unto the greatest of them, saith the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more." And so we see now that during the days of Jeremiah, God announced a new covenant. Now, Israel, as far as Israel is concerned, the northern kingdom had already gone into captivity by Assyria in 721 when Assyria took the northern kingdom into captivity. And the southern kingdom was about to go into captivity beginning in 605-04, and finally in 598, the final captivity or the final destruction there. And so we see that Israel was facing this dispersion at this point, if you will. Northern kingdom had already been taken captive. The southern kingdom is on the verge of being taken captive. Jeremiah, you remember, was prophesying against in Jerusalem, telling them, change your ways or things are not going to be right. And for his reward, they filled in the pit and so forth. But we see here that during the days, even during the days of the old covenant, during the days of the law, God announced a new covenant. In the midst of the old covenant, God announced a new covenant that would be established. And so we see that God announced a new covenant that he would bring about for the house of Israel and the house of Judah, implying a reunited Israel, if you will. And he was announcing this new covenant, that this new covenant would do what the old covenant could not do. The old covenant could not ensure the ability of the people to live up to it. The new covenant would. And so we see, again, the new covenant would bring about a spiritual transformation. The old covenant could not do it because it depended upon the people. The new covenant will do it because it's going to be dependent upon God. God said, I will. Okay, any questions there now? Well, I'll figure out where we're at. Okay, verse 9. It says, I'm going to make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day when I took them out of the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt, because they continued not in my covenant, and I regarded them not, saith the Lord. And so the first covenant of Mosaic was a conditional covenant. The new covenant will be unconditional. But as far as the first covenant is concerned, Israel's withdrawal from it caused God to withdraw from it. He says, I regarded them not. So I took them out. They did not continue in my covenant, and I regarded them not. So God began his withdrawal, if you will, from Israel because of their disobedience. Then in verse 10, it says, for this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, saith the Lord. I will put my laws into their minds and write them in their hearts, and I will be to them a God, and they shall be to me a people. And so again, as we have seen, the promises of the new covenant are termed better. And we see here in verse 10 that there will be an inward knowledge of God's laws. Compliance with God's laws will be by desire and not by compulsion. Before, it's pretty much a compulsory type of system. And then we see there's going to be a transformation that will take place under this new covenant. Now let's look at Ezekiel chapter 36. Ezekiel, the 36th chapter, verse 26. Ezekiel, referring now to the new covenant. Ezekiel chapter 36, verse 26. God says, a new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you, and I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and I will give you a heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit within you, and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you shall keep my ordinances and do them, and ye shall dwell in the land, and so forth. And in verse 29, he says, and I will save you from all of your uncleanness. And so so we see now that the new covenant, as Israel entered into the new covenant, they will be then indwelt by the Spirit of God. And as a result of this being indwelt by the Spirit of God, then they will have this instruction, just as we do, on how we can live and the wherewithal, the basis for which to live according to how God desires for them to live. So again, back over in Hebrews, he says, I made a covenant with the house of Israel. He says, I gave a covenant with Israel. We would refer to that as the Old Testament of the law. They did not live up to the law. 721, the northern kingdom went into captivity. 605-04, the southern kingdom began to go into captivity. And during the days of Jeremiah, somewhere around 620 or so, he began to prophesy, you know what, you're going to be led into captivity because of your disobedience to God's laws, but even in spite of that, I am going to establish a new covenant that I will bring you into after those days when I regard you not. And so, during the days of the law, God announced a new covenant. Now, if he announced a new covenant during the days of the operation of the old covenant, what is the implication there?
It's better.
It's better, and what else?
The old
is going to be done away with. We're going to have something new. The old is going to be done away with. Exactly right. And so, again, now, these recipients were thinking about going back into the old covenant, and the author is saying, you know what? Back here around 620, God already declared that it's going to be superseded with a new covenant. It's going to be done away with. Why would you want to go back to that? There's nothing there to go back with anyway. Remember, we've already seen it's been annulled. And again, in chapter 10, we see that Christ did away with the first in order that he may establish the second.
Is he saying that the new covenant is established?
Is established? Yeah, because he's already said the new covenant has been established. He's already said God has already established his testament through the person of his son. And so the new covenant is now established. He's already said that this has been annulled. Now, again, they were thinking about going back to this, and the author is saying, you know what? Back around 620, God already said it's going to be passing away. Why go back to that? Okay, any other questions down to verse 10? Now, again, God had promised a new covenant. This new covenant is really the essence of regeneration. It really is. The essence of regeneration. The new covenant guarantees regeneration to its participants. So that is there. And then in verse 11, and he says, and they shall not teach every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, know the Lord, for they shall all know me, from the least to the greatest. And so we saw that. And what he is saying, that we don't have to go around, the participants of the new covenant will not have to go around and saying to everybody, know the Lord, because they will have the indwelling Spirit of God. He says, I will put my Spirit within them. And again, this is, we have the Spirit within us, that's regeneration. And he says, participants of the new covenant, and again, this is in promise to Israel, will have the essence of regeneration and its fulfillment. Okay, verse 12. He goes on and says, For I will be merciful to their unrighteousness, and their sins and their iniquities will I remember no more. And so we see that the new covenant guarantees the forgiveness of sins. Now, again, forgiveness of sins was not new. The Old Testament participants of the Old Covenant had a forgiveness of sins, but they were always conscious that there was never a permanent forgiveness of sins. Now, under the new covenant, God says, I will remember their sins no more. And so while there was this forgiveness, this atonement, if you will, under the old, under the new, they'll be done away with, completely done away with. The repeated sacrifices, you recall, serve to remind the participants under the old covenant that the sins are always before them. Again, every year, they had to have the Day of Atonement for Israel. So they knew, next year, same thing. Well, under the new, that will not be necessary. God says, I will remember their sins no more, and if he remembers their sins no more, what is there then to atone for? Nothing there. And so again, this will be as a result of the final sacrifice, which removed sin, the sin question, settled. Then in verse 13, he says, in that he saith, a new covenant he hath made the first old. Now that which decayeth and groweth old is ready to vanish away. And so under the old covenant, he said around 620, I'm going to make a new covenant. And so now we're in 70 A.D., and he says that is ready to vanish away. Or prior to 70 A.D., I'm sorry. He says that is ready to vanish away. Christ has come, and he's established a new covenant. And by the establishment of a new covenant, and the old is gone. It's decayed and done away with. Okay, any questions outside of dispensations?
Alright. Okay.
Did
you say ready to vanish away? Hadn't it already vanished away when Jesus died for us?
It really
had.
But I think it's just this reference here. They were still trying to work it out. He says, this whole system's ready to vanish away. It's on its way out.
So is it kind of like, the overlap of dispensations kind of thing? Like, they have a little time period to, like, shift over, but...
Yeah, I think so. And again, when he says it's ready to vanish away, there was those that were still holding to the old. There were those that were thinking they're going back to the old. It was still there visible. Their earthly copy was still there functioning. And he said, you know what? That's ready to go. It's on its way out. Okay, any other questions here now in chapter 8? Now, this... area of this covenant, the new covenants. The new covenant now deals with what?
Israel.
The Mosaic covenant dealt with earthly, physical matters. The new covenant deals with spiritual matters. I will put my spirit within them. A new heart will I give to them. Okay. Now, in this new covenant, there is a new covenant that will be fulfilled by Israel in the future. And when we're talking about the future, it will be the establishment of the millennial kingdom. So Israel will come in and fulfill the new covenant in the future. This is to happen, and it's happened unto Israel. Now then, the church has a new covenant as well. There are several viewpoints to this. One is the all-millennials, where they say that the church has replaced Israel. Israel has no future. It's all church now. The church has replaced Israel. Covenant theologians, I think, kind of hold it along that line. The church has replaced Israel. And then there is the thought that the new covenant is for Israel only. Church has no part of it. And then there's another viewpoint that there are two new covenants, and there are some tremendous dispensational teachers that hold to this. There are two new covenants, one for Israel and one for the church. Men that I admire greatly, men that I respect, men that I wish I had half their brains as they study the Word of God, hold to the fact that there are two new covenants, one for Israel and one for the church. Now, I'd like to give you another opinion. I believe that there is one new covenant believe that the church is a participant of this new covenant now. Israel will come into its benefits later. Now, when you went through Romans 11, remember they had the olive tree there? Now, there are some variants of opinion of that, but I think the olive tree that's referred to in Romans 11 would be the Abrahamic covenant. The Abrahamic covenant is a seed covenant, if you will, for all the other covenants. Remember the Abrahamic covenant? Now, the Abrahamic covenant promised what? A land? A race? And a seed. And Paul, well, let's back up here. All of this was promised to Israel. Is that not correct? That was all promised to Israel. All right. Now, Paul said, in thy seed, which is singular, who is he talking about there? And from the seed now, while all this is promised to Israel, there's also kind of a division here, if you will. And the seed was also promised to all, was it not? And the seed is the blessing that came through Christ. Now, that would be spiritual. Are you with me yet? All right, the seed part of the Abrahamic covenant was promised to all. All of this was promised to Israel. This and this was not promised to all. This is very much limited to Israel. The seed, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the world be blessed. Right? Okay. Now, when Christ came, what did he originally proclaim when he first came to earth? Do you proclaim the kingdom? And you remember he told his disciples, I want you to go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel only. Remember that? And so when Christ came, he offered this. These pens. I think I'll go up and swipe one out of Mara's office. He offered all of this when he came. He offered this to Israel. Didn't he? And then we get to chapter 12 of Matthew. And in chapter 12 of Matthew, as Christ offered the kingdom to Israel, the leaders of Israel said, you know what, all that you're doing is nothing but by the power of Satan. And Christ said, I am doing these works by the power of the Spirit of God. It's the Spirit of God that is doing all these things. And they said, no, it's Satan. And so then Christ said, okay, then you have blasphemed the Spirit of God, and that shall not be forgiven you. And this is that unpardonable sin that he gets hung up on. The unpardonable sin was a dispensational thing when Israel rejected their king. And then you go in the last part of chapter 12 where Christ says, where the disciples, somebody comes and says, your brother and your mother are outside. And he says, who is my mother and who is my brother? And he says, it's anyone who believes. And then we get into chapter 13 where we have the parables of the mystery form of the kingdom. And then we see there in chapter 12 and 13, we see a shift there. And then we get to Matthew chapter 28. What does Christ say to his disciples in Matthew 28? I want you to go into all the world and what? Preach the gospel. And the gospel is the blessing that has come through the seed. You see. Are you with me here so far?
Yes.
All right. Now then, Romans 11 tells us that Christ came and he offered this to Israel. Israel rejected it. And it says the natural was broken off and the wild was grafted in. Now, what only could the Gentiles be grafted into as far as the seed covenant was concerned? Or the Abrahamic covenant, I'm sorry. The covenant given to Abraham. What only could, only the seed part of it. We can only be grafted into the spiritual aspect of it because it was only the spiritual aspect that was promised to all. This is very much uniquely Israel. This also applies to Israel. Israel rejected it. They regarded not God. And it's for that reason God says, I withdrew from them. Israel has been broken off, and I believe, and again, some very good dispensational teachers, again, people that I respect, I just can't respect anybody anymore. I believe some disagree with this, but But I believe what has happened now, when we have been grafted in, we have been grafted into the spiritual aspect of the new covenant. When Christ was talking to his disciples there in the upper room, you remember he said, this is the new covenant? What would they have been thinking of when Christ said, this is the new covenant? They would have gone all the way back to Jeremiah, remember? That's supposed to be an R. When Jeremiah, through Jeremiah, God said, I'm going to establish a new covenant. They had no concept of the church, did they? Acts chapter 1. Lord, are you at this time going to restore the kingdom of Israel? They had no concept of the church. So when Christ said this is a new covenant with his disciples, this is the life of Christ right here. When Christ said this is a new covenant, they would have been thinking back about the one in Jeremiah. Now, you remember in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, when Paul gave the Lord's Supper and the procedure for the Lord's Supper, what did he say? For I received of the Lord that which I'm going to give unto you, and he says, this is the new covenant. Remember that? And so we see now the church is being brought into the new covenant, and as Paul is referring back to what Christ said, they would have been thinking of the spiritual aspect of the new covenant. And so I think what we have now is the fact that Israel is broken off, and I believe that the church has been brought into the spiritual aspects of the new covenant. That's the only thing that was promised to all. And then when the fullness of the Gentiles be come in, then the church will be removed, and then God will then institute his purging of Israel, preparing them to enter in, and then they then will receive the new covenant, the spiritual aspect of the new covenant, and then they will also receive this aspect as well, and a king.
Okay, I just want to see if I'm understanding. So there's one new covenant, not two, from our understanding right now, but the church shares in part of the blessing, but only the spiritual.
Only the spiritual.
And the Israel shares in the physical, and the spiritual was taken away?
No.
They still share in the spiritual?
We have the...
They will.
No. We have the land, further confirmed by the Palestinian covenant, right? We have the blessing. Wait a minute, that's not what I want. The race, further confirmed by the covenant with Jacob and so forth. And then we have the seed. Now, the seed is a spiritual aspect. Now, the seed then will come in, and then God promised a new covenant. The new covenant would be dealing with the spiritual aspect. This is promised to Israel. Christ came during his lifetime, first advent, and he offered this to Israel. Right? He offered the whole thing to Israel, but we're just dealing with the seed right now, okay? This is the only one that all were promised the benefit of. Okay? All right, now he offered the whole ball of wax to Israel. Israel said, nah, we will not have you rule over us. And so as a result of that, Israel, it says, was broken off. They will not be brought in again until God begins his purge program with Israel and then brought into the kingdom. Now, during the kingdom, they'll receive this whole thing here in the kingdom. But right now, there's only one aspect of this thing that has been promised to all people. Christ broke it off, and after they broke off, Christ said, I want you to go to all the world and proclaim the gospel. The gospel then deals with what? Regeneration, does it not? What did a new covenant deal with? Regeneration. And so I think, in all likelihood, the church now has been brought into the seed. In thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. And he said, seed not as of many, but as of one, and that seed which is Christ. And so as a result of us being believers in Christ, we become Abraham's seed, in a sense, don't we? And so I believe then that what we have now is that we, as a church, have entered into what Israel rejected. And again, the only thing that was available to all was a spiritual aspect of it, not the land, not the blessing, not the Levitic covenant.
This is where the
The natural was broken off, the wild was grafted in. When the fullness of the Gentiles be come in, then God will again dip again to the old Israel. And so now, let's look at Hebrews chapter 12 a minute. Verses 23 to 24. Hebrews chapter 12, verses 23 and 24. It says, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn who are written in heaven, and to God, the judge of all, and to the spirits of just man made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant. All right, so we see the general assembly and church of the firstborn, believers, and the spirits of just man made perfect, Israel. Jesus is the mediator of the new covenant. And so we see that both are connected to the new covenant, which Jesus is the mediator of. And so again, some hold one new covenant to Israel, another new covenant to the church. And I believe they do that because of, I think it's a good reason to do that, because they want to maintain that distinction between Israel and the church. And there is a distinction between Israel and the church. But again, I think Israel was broken out of the spiritual aspects. The church was grafted in, and the only thing they could be grafted into was the thing, in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. All never entered into that. Only Israel entered into that. And so that's why I believe there is one new covenant. Israel was broken off. Church grafted in. Church will be completed. Israel will be brought back in. Israel will be purged to be fit to receive all the blessings. And it's during this period of time now that we get to play as the snakes and so forth.
Okay. So we're seeing this verse about no one will need to teach his neighbor anymore. Refers to us now.
Spiritual regeneration.
It's actually fulfilled now in us.
I think we have this indwelling Spirit of God, yes. I think that's exactly what it's saying. I do not have to come to you as a fellow believer and say, listen, I want you to know God. Why not? You have the indwelling Spirit of God in you.
Can you explain to me again the difference between Matthew 12 and 13?
Yeah. Matthew 12, we have, for Christ's sake, you blaspheme. What did Israel do? The leaders of Israel did. They attributed the work of the Son of God and dwelt by the Spirit of God to the devil. Says that's unpardonable. That was it. And so he says that's an unpardonable sin. And what was the unpardonable sin? I think that is when Israel then began its period of being cut off. Okay. And then Matthew chapter, now, last part of chapter 12, we have a pivotal illustration there when Christ looks upon all the multitudes and says, this is my brother. Whosoever believes in me is my brother. And then he gets into Matthew 13. Matthew 13 contains the parables, I think, of the mystery form of the church. He left the house, it says right there in 13:1. He leaves the house and he goes out. And then he begins these parables of the mystery form of the church. And then we begin to see a transition in the mystery, in the ministry of the apostles. Prior to that, they were only to go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Follow that, you check it out, they begin to go into the way of the Gentiles. And then in Matthew chapter 28, as he gives his disciples his last instructions, he says, go into all the world. So I think 12 and 13 are really the pivotal point, if you will, in the ministry of Christ while he was on earth. He came to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. He offered them the kingdom. He offered them the opportunity to come into the fulfillment of the new covenant, the Abrahamic covenant, the Davidic covenant, the Palestinian covenant. He offered all that to Israel. Israel says, no, you're doing the works of the devil. And Christ said, all right, this is it. You crossed the line. And then he began to go to the Gentiles. And then we had this area. So we're finally, that's about as good as he spins. Finally, about 70 AD, Israel was finally and completely and totally broken off, dispersed. Maybe some want to go a couple years later, Masada, or whatever. Israel, the temple was destroyed in 70 AD. They were broken off, and the Gentiles were grafted in. And you recall from your study of Acts, the first seven chapters of the book of Acts. They were struggling this, through with this, weren't they? Trying to get this thinking, this kingdom thinking over into the church thinking. Peter in Acts chapter 10 hadn't quite got it together yet. But this was his transition, if you will, from the old to the fulfillment of the new.
I understand. In Romans, we're learning about victory, or the olive tree. We're talking about it, and we're learning that it was God's place, our place of service in God's plan. Why is it not that, and why is Abraham coming?
Well, what is our place of service? Fulfilling whatever the Spirit of God wants me to do. So if we do that, it is, we are getting plugged into God's plan. I don't think it's contradictory.
Okay. No, I just hadn't thought of it that way.
It's the Abrahamic covenant, since it was unconditional, it depended only on God, is the new covenant. It's just an extension of the Abrahamic covenant. And
only one aspect of it, the seed aspect of it.
Only the seed.
Now, the old covenant, now don't get the Abrahamic covenant confused with the Mosaic covenant when we're talking about the law. The Abrahamic covenant, God promised to Abraham Israel, the ancient Israel, a land to live in, and a blessing, which was to come to a seed. Paul, Galatians chapter 3. And that seed is Christ. Alright? We enter into a blessing through Christ, and we become the true sons of Abraham, if you will. And so, again, I just think, and again, I wouldn't, you know, set my salvation in it or anything like that, but I just believe that the church has been brought in, wrapped in, to the only aspect of the new covenant, or the old covenant, of the Abrahamic covenant, that we can be brought into, and that's the Paul aspect of it.
The land and race—you probably touched on this. Maybe I'm just not getting it. How do we know that only the seed that we're brought into? How would that differentiate? Like, what verses?
Well, remember in Genesis 28, he's talking about. Well, first off, he's promised Abraham the land, the seed, and the land, the race, and then later on he's talking about the seed and in thy seed. Now, we were never promised to be Israel. We were never promised an earthly blessing. That was only given to Israel. Israel was promised in Genesis chapter 15, where God laid out all the boundaries of the land that Israel's going to have eventually. That was to Israel. That was not to the church. There's nothing in the church, really. The only thing, you know, you can come up with as far as the church is all, and in thy nation shall all, and in thy seed shall all the nations. Then Paul, remember in Galatians chapter 3, says that seed was Christ. And so I think we can make a differentiation there, because it's only in the seed that the word all is used. Otherwise, it is exclusively Israel. And Israel, of course, would be included in the all. And so then God then, because Israel could not live up to the old covenant, God promised Israel this new covenant. Israel rejected it. I think we were grafted into it. We will be completed. Israel will be brought back in, purged the tribulation period, and then brought back into a position then where they can receive all of the Abrahamic covenant. Okay, I'll let you out. 20 seconds early so you can study.
Oh, graceful.